Today I'm going to talk about some of my thesis research on the Hawaii lavas and some of my recent thought on the fate of subducted slabs. And this research is benefited from the collaboration with my thesis advisor John Eiler and Paul Osimo at Caltech and my current advisor Stan Ahui. So first of all, I'm going to define the problem and give you a brief review of recent studies on Hawaiian lavas, and I will spend most of the time talking to you about the inversion model to explain those data. So this figure, Stan has showed this before. In last decades, after Stan and Hoffman and Allegra has laid out the fundamental framework for managerial chemists by defining the global end members, many efforts have been dedicated to try to put those end members into the geological settings to understand why and how those end members have been formed. So here you can see a classical view of this, and most of the mantle heterogeneity has been contributed to the subducted slabs. And because some of the isotope or element tracers seem to tell us that those end members actually derived from rocks, which was once on the surface of the Earth. Oxygen isotope was one of the this kind of tracers. And here in Hawaii, based on geochemical trend, there are geochemical diversity has been characterized into two trends, the Keo trend and Loa trend. The Loa trend includes Lauihi, Mauloa, Hualalai, Lanai, Oahu, and Kauai. And the Keo trend includes Kilauea, Mauna Kea, Kohala, Maui, and Molokai. Of course, it's based on different geochemical tracers. In terms of oxygen isotope, you can see clearly that the olivine ferrocrust from Loa trend volcano have delta weighting values equal to or higher than 5.2, which is upper mantle values, whereas olivine ferrocrust from Keo trend volcanoes have lower delta weighting values. When this thing first been discovered, many people suggest that the Keo trend volcano has preferentially sample the lower ocean crust because they have low delta weighting values, whereas the Loa trend volcano sample the upper ocean crust. If you plot those oxygen isotope composition with other geochemical tracers, the oxygen isotope of olivine ferrocrust do correlate with the other isotopes of the host lavas. For example, here you see lead, neodymium, and strontium, and helium. So a conventional way to do this, if you do a multiple component analysis, then you will immediately realize that those data set can be explained by three end members. One is Kohala end member, which is enriched end member here. And the depleted component, which is Mauna Kea, which lie here, here, and here. And a high helium component. So in the last 5 or 10 years, a lot of very good study has been triggered by two drill cores. The one drill core is here, HSDP drill core, and the other one is KSDP drill core in Oahu. Because Oahu, the Kohala volcano and Mauna Kea volcano are two end members, so it's very good to look at one single volcano, look at the temper variation of one single volcano so that we have a sense of their time evolution. So if we look at the Hawaii, the Mauna Kea volcano, HSDP2, amazingly we find that the low delta weighting values, which once was thought to be the characteristic of Keo trend volcano, those actually only occurred at sub-area part of the Mauna Kea, whereas most of the submarine part of Mauna Kea have normal delta weighting values. And also you see the delta weighting variation does not seem to correlate with rheogenic isotope composition. The second study, we find that in Kolov, the KSTP drilling project, we also find that in the upper part we saw heavy delta weighting values, which another extreme. But when you go down to very deep, the delta weighting values actually tend to be normal. But this time, something different. You can notice that the delta weighting value variation actually correlates with neodymium isotope composition change, strontium and niobium ratio, trace element ratio, and calcium aluminum ratios. So those high delta weighting one has been also contributed to be the upper oceanic crust. So, and this variation has been considered to be the different degree of interaction between the subducting material and the plume source and the upper mantle. So to explain those data, you can have the traditional way to do this is to put a forward model, which we know everything about the average of oceanic crust. Then we impose some kind of melting model here. Then we assume some kind of thinking of they're isolated. And again, assuming another melting model, then we get those data and compare with our observation and to see how good our model match. But this way, you go a long way. The ARC part, people don't know a lot, not very sure about that. And people don't know during when the subducting slabs was in the mantle, what's going to happen. So the one good thing here is people noticed is that the melting here, most people believe that it's very minimum. It will change the trace element composition by a lot, but major element composition doesn't change a lot. So what I was trying to do is to have an inversion by imposing a good melting model here, and using major element, we assume that major element during this whole process haven't been significantly altered. So by knowing by posing this inversion problem, then we can invert the geochemistry of those subducted slabs, and hopefully we can have some constraint on what happened in the subduction zone. So if you look at before doing that, we can take a look at all the data in Hawaii of major element data, and this is a phase diagram of a typical basaltic system, and this is phosphorite, anorthite, diopside phase diagram. And this is the proposed primary melt of mid-oceanic basalt, and this is a proposed primary melt of Hawaii lavas. And already I assuming the potential temperature here is 1500 K as far as 1600 K. So, well, anyway, when the melt start to crystallize, they're in the olivine control field. So it will have an olivine control line here. Then soon they reach they're being saturated by anorthite. Then very quick, they've been saturated by diopside as well. But all those features, actually, you can notice them in the major element data. And you see a olivine control line here. And when the project is saturated, you see aluminum here has a little bit hump here. And you see the calcium change, which is will suggest the CPX is being crystallized. And at the end, you can see the iron oxide and titanium oxide being crystallized. Beside this general trend, you will notice other things, which actually cannot be explained by this fracking crystallization trend. For example, those blue dots are Luihi lavas, and those are Koa lavas. And they are you cannot generate by a single fractional crystallization trend. But you can always see that I can have a different degree of melting of some Monte Perrier type than might produce this. But those, if you do that, they're supposed to have same isotopic composition, but we didn't see that. Here I also plot some acrogite melt by Perlman and Hirschman in 2003. They're particularly choose acrogite or peroxide, and they melt them, which has the mid-ocean rate basaltic composition, and they melted them, and those are the melt composition. So another option, alternative way to produce coal lava would be, first I'm going to mix the primitive melt, a primary melt of Aluhi lavas, mix it with them, and then I fractional crystallize them. In any one of this diagram, this strategy, this schematic plot works pretty good. So in real life, this is how we are going to do this inversion based on major element. So we just assume that the coal sample is a mixture of Luigi, primary melt of Luigi, and some acrogite melt. And but there is some constraint here. The first constraint will be this primary melt magma of Luigi lava has to be on the Olmec control line defined by some Luigi glass. And the parent melt of coal sample has to be on Olmec control line defined by any given coal sample. Then those acrogite melt will be defined by those melting experiments. But in this very simple way, in this two-dimensional plot, the answer you know is not going to be unique, because you can draw any line here, then the intersection would be an answer. But in a multiple element inversion, this you can find a minimized single answer. So this is an example of doing that. It's the primary melt of Luigi lavas and acrogite melt, and you can find that this is the one coal sample, and this is calculated by using that mixing proportion, and they're actually pretty good. So yeah. So after you do each inversion based on major element composition, you will get a degree of mixing. And from the mixing, and we know everything about Luigi, after time primary melt of Luigi, I know the parent melt of Kola, we can extrapolate what's the composition of the acrogite melt. And once we define the melt, we can generate many mixing lines, so we can test this model. And from that acrogite melt, we know experimentally the potential coefficient, and we can trace back what's the trace element of that acrogite component. Then we know some nature of that acrogite. So, there are two choices of this model. First, you can think that the melt is homogeneous, which is I mixing with one homogeneous melt in terms of major element composition. And the other thing would be a complicated situation would be I'm mixing with acrogenic source rock, which generate a melt, have different degree of melting, so it generates a spectrum of trace element and trace element composition. So the first one, I try the first one. I can define the N members. Then I can do a lot of tests. This is an example of some test I was doing. So basically, this mixing line are generated by I inverting for each one of them what's the n member r, I would take average of that, and I can draw a mixing line. So they say that the most important part will be for each sample, they all approximately has the same mixing degree. So same that this model explains the observed data well. And in principle, you can generate a huge amount of data set to test, including major element, trace element. I don't want to show a lot of them. And if you assume that the source rock is homogeneous and generate different degree melting of melt and you mix them, then they're not supposed to have the same mixing proportion for the sample. And then I draw every mixing line. I guess the color bar is not good. I should put the blue and red there. So just the main mixing line will be here, which describe the trend of the data. And you can do a lot of them. I'm not going to show all of them. So after this model, you know that Akrajack component R. They have isotopic composition. And most importantly, you know that the delta 18 rock of that Akrajack component has very high delta 18 values, like in the homogeneous Akrajack melt case, at 11.3. And in the homogeneous source rock part, it's at 8.3. They're all very high than the upper mantle rock. And they look like upper ocean crust. And also you can get a sense of the depleted mantle model age, which means when this acrogite has effectively separated from the upper mantle. So even though those two models are sort of extreme cases, but you see that the strontium isotopic composition, they didn't change a lot. And neodymium have some variations. But they're all within what has been defined, EM1 component by Stan. So, and after that, this is the after inversion, you have a spectrum of trace element data. Those red dots are what's the acrylate composition. And in either case, you see that the heavy rare earth element, they are very close to mid-ocean ridge basalt. This is N-morb normalized. But for the light rare earths, it's highly variable, even though the average is look like mid-ocean ridge basalt. To explain that, you can involve the maybe very low degree of partial melting during subduction, fluid mobilization, and different kind of thing here. So to conclude, I have shown you that all the finicles, they are correlated with trace element and regen isotopes in Kulau. And we developed an inverse model to try to understand what's the property of this recycled material. And basically, the idea is that the Kulau shield building lavas are a mixture of mantle pyritite and acrylate melt, and that the pyrolysis of this acrylate is look like mid-ocean ridge basalt, has the depleted mantle model age between 1.0 to 1.8 billion years. Then we also see that acrylate component has delta 18 values between 8.3 to 11.3, and implying there are upper crustal basalt or gabbro with a low temperature alteration history containing a small amount of sediments. And this basalt might have been experienced partial melting or fluid mobilization before their subduction or before forming acrylate. And the last one is, I haven't explained that, after this inversion, I know for each sample what degree of melting they are and what kind of mixing proportion they are, so I can approximate the size of the block. So if we consider all the material from same block, I will get 10 kilometers for the homogeneous melt case, But if I think the homogeneous source, this thing will, the volume will be cut in half. So we'll get at the 5 kilometers across if it's one spherical block. But if it's many block, it's going to be much smaller than that. And if it's being stretched, it's also much smaller than that. Okay, that's it. It's okay. Basically, if you look at the global ocean crust, what do you find? Or here. So the average ocean crust is about, this is ophiolite, that's about 8. And if you look at current oceanic crust, the average of that is about 7 per mil. And if you have sediments, they will drive you to this way. So I think there are might be small amount of ocean crust, sediments. Basically, that's. It's also, in the beginning I thought, it's in the one if there's sediments, you will supposed to see like barium will be much higher, very high in the sediments. Strontium, lead are very high. And but if you have low degree of melting, they should be quite low. But here I saw a very highly variable composition. So right now I'm not very sure about that.
I guess I don't understand what you mean by homogeneous source. Is this the envision as like as a mechanical liquid
prototype acrodite,
or is it just
acrodite? I'm thinking is just acrogite, but because of melting, some melting happened there, so it might be homogenized in some way. Or if it had been melted during subduction, it also can be homogenized in some chemically.
So you're thinking. Just taking acrogite for that scenario without.
Yes. But during the mixing process, I have to have prototype there to mix.
Right.
Otherwise, I can't get the proportion of the, you see that proportion of that acrogen melt actually very small, like 10-20%.
And with that, that's going to be a basic melt. So
right.
How, I mean, the problem that I always have conceptually with that is that's going to react against the effect.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's really difficult to keep that signature if you have low degrees of acrogen melting because it's
going to be very expensive. Right. That's true. Just the thing is, one of the model actually, the one I thought offset is true. Just the second model I'm thinking of different degree melting. That one actually, I have the data which includes the peroxide melting as well. So it's in the beginning it's acrogite. If you have high degree melting, it's going to be peroxide. So I think it's already considered that. I haven't shown you other things I have tested. Actually, the homogeneous source one is actually not my favorite model because if you're looking at other part, you see that it, mixing already happened. It's not going to be a homogeneous source in terms of isotopes. So right now, I'm actually prefer the second one, homogeneous source, which they have different degree of melting. The melt could be, the residue could be still acrogite, or it also can be a peroxide there. So I didn't distinguish between the two.
So when you were showing the Kalawa Lawa's, the ability variation to downhole,
yeah.
Just the top pot?
Yes.
So does this model only apply to the top part, or does it also explain
the
more normal value?
The way I did is I used the other data, is about 200 data from the top to the bottom. And I invert all of them. And the lower part has only like very small degree of melting, very small degree of mixing part. But I should say, in any inversion model, I have to account for some kind of
errors.
Right. When I put the error there, might be 1 or 2% mixing there. So the bottom, I would say that bottom part does not explain well. That's most are pretty time out because. And upper part will be.
Is the top part of that section subarial or submarine?
There are, right now it's subarial.
I know it's subarial, but was it deposited subarial?
Yes. They're they're in the Makabu hat. I didn't show you where the right now it's subarial. And there are landslide samples. When it's going to submarine part, it's actually everything tend to be normal, which is weird.
So you said 10 to 20% eclogite melt? In the whole melt?
No, it's just the range for each sample. I can get a range of degree of mixing.
What can you say what the eclogite
proportion
is in the source?
Oh, that's actually small. It's if you can, I did some kind of calculation. It's less than 10%.
Less than 10%?
Yeah. If you count volumetrically, it's more like 2% of the block. The reason why at the top you can see that is because the eclogite has eclogite or peroxide, they have low melting temperature. So at the low melting temperature, when peridotite stop melting, they're melting a lot. So you can see that signal by a lot.
So this is the first time I've heard using eclogite to generate a new orbital point.
Okay.
It's a cool approach, but I'm wondering then if what you think we make a high new component.
The feeling of doing this before is that. I find that for each place, each geological settings, it could be even for AM1 or high mu, you have to consider that thing separately. You have to do a similar approach. Because as I showed before, any of the processes involved, the final result will be different. Imagine here you have some of the arc part you melt, you generate a lot of melt, then your residue eclogite will be different, right? And during this process is if you have some phase change or evolve some other things like passing through transition zone, something will change, and when they come back, they will be different. So it's very hard to for me to sort of generalize what kind of component being formed by what, based on just looking at the isotope signature, because their evolution evolved like billion years history is just it's just hard to say. So I think what I did is just try to understand directly what's happening, what's the composition here. I try to infer what's the path and what had happened. So basically, I don't know.
Thank you.